For the record, I'm done trying to make y'all comfortable.
That's right.
For the record, you ain't trying to grow, then it's done for you.
That's right.
For the record, lab on me going all the way.
All the way.
For the record, ain't trying to link, no time to waste.
Stop calling.
For the record. 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 For the record, I'm done trying to make y'all comfortable.
That's right.
Welcome to the Clink Moments of Redemption. Rafael Cesan was sentenced to 14 years for importation of ecstasy in 2003. In this moment of redemption, Rafa details his arrest and the movements of the drug trade he was involved in.
Yes, brother. So taking you back to those last few months and years, my career, which had begun, sort of freestyling in backyards and in cars and parties and so on, to picking up the mic for essentially for a few drinks on the bar at the club, to then people kind of recognizing some sort of a talent, and then developing a live show, and then, recording music and putting out demos. So 99 to 2003 was a steady kind of growth of that. I was arrested in 99, and that was a bit of a slap in the face. I did 3 months, Park Lee, Young Offenders, Gangster's Paradise.
It was the Young Offenders. It was a place you didn't want to go. You know, most people were happy to go to the main.
Yeah, you know what? It was the roughest environment I saw, even after with my 7 year incarceration from 2003 to 2010, the stint I did in 99, even though I was fine, I was protected. A whole crew that was running with me that year had been arrested a few months before me. So it was like, essentially was like a homecoming, but definitely it was very rough at the time. But back to the story, that was a big slap in the face for me. That was like a thing, it really sort of made me pull my pants up and sort of want to stick to the dream. And the dream was music. And until 2003, we had an awesome run, both as an MC with people like Club Joint All Stars, which was like the biggest hip hop DJ crew in Australia, DJ Motto, DJ Peter Guns, DJ Tickles, DJ Demo, and the affiliated brothers and sisters around. We were touring around the country with that. And then separately with Illa Familia, Immigrant Latino Australian Family, we were, putting out CDs, albums, and doing shows all over the country and getting paid quite handsomely. The scene was very different then. And then I prepared this around the world trip to meet with record labels and festivals that were interested in our product. It was quite unique. Latin hip hop at the time is nothing like the reggaeton explosion that we have today. But it was still very popular because people like Latin music and dancing, and it was fun, and it was quite sexy. And
you hear it, you start to
bomb. Yeah, exactly.
Sexy is a good word.
Man. And
even I feel sexy when I'm sexy.
Yeah, there you go, man. Especially after a couple of tequilas, loco,
that's my favorite. Anyway,
we need to. I'll keep that in mind next time, Brent. Whenever we meet in person, some Don Julio, a nice bottle of Don Julio.
Oh, the Don Perignon of the tequila.
Yes, indeed, señor, my favorite. So I guess the big disappointment story is, parallel to my music career, I was getting myself involved with some serious people and some serious situations. Money was made and so on. And then in 2003, I go on this around the world trip, as I was saying, and at the airport, they grabbed me and they charged me with conspiring to import large commercial quantity of MDMA. And that was the end of the dream.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I know that feeling all too well, unfortunately.
I know you do.
You sort of turn up and you think that you're sweet and it's a controlled delivery and it's all over.
Yeah.
It just goes from 0 to 100 in seconds and you're on your...
Yeah.
You just hog tied, you're done.
Yeah.
GP in your face with a machine gun. And
yeah. I tell you something funny with me. So the crime had occurred a year before. So they grabbed me at the airport leaving the country. Thinking that perhaps I wasn't going to come back, or perhaps finally admitting that they had nothing else on me. They'd been watching me for a whole year and, okay, let's just take this opportunity to grab him. But when they grabbed me, I was like, hold the fuck up. Are you guys, did these guys put something in my bag or something? Because I knew I hadn't done anything, right? Like, anyway, for a long time. And when they came, when the feds finally came to the office to arrest me, I was like, hold on a second, conspiring to import? I'm fucking leaving the country. Don't you mean conspiring to export or some shit like that? They go, nah, man, conspiring to import involving so on. And I was like, oh man, the penny dropped and my face just went white, you know?
Wow.
And that began that crazy, crazy journey of 7 years of incarceration involving, you know, the sleeping judge, high court, Supreme Court appeals, you know, newspaper, radio, TV, you know, all based on this kangaroo court circus show that was, you know, my trial and everything that came after.
Rafa, can we go back to that? To that lead up,
please,
to that arrest? Yeah. I mean, we've already sort of touched on this, you and I, and I think for our listeners out there, they would be very interested to know, you know, what it was and what was going
on. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So essentially, I was arrested and charged as the contact point, essentially, between a crew that was working out of Federal Express, which is, you know, one of the big express freight systems in the world, yep, companies in the world, and a syndicate that was based in Sydney, Sydney-based. Myself, funnily enough, and the feds all knew this, I had retired from the game when this actually took place, and they were aware of that. They knew that. They put it down on paper. They put me down as a middleman, sort of making the connection between these crews, because that was essentially what my plan was, to leave these two crews connected, and I was walking away into the Latin hip-hop sunset, let's say.
Yeah.
Upon my arrest, they pushed me to roll on some of the people that were mentioned in the case. I did not do so, and when I let them know that I wasn't going to do so, then they essentially stated that they were going to make me the man in charge, and they did successfully. Because
when you say the man in charge,
yeah,
we'll put that in a bit of a layman's terms.
Sure,
classed as principal.
Principal, exactly. Yes, that's the term. Instigator, principal, owner of the drugs.
Yep.
Yeah.
So therefore, they're alleging that you are the mastermind behind,
indeed,
directing those under you.
Correct. Correct. Which of course, most people sort of, conspiracy. They didn't catch you with your hands on the drugs. But actually, when it comes to the law, it's worse. The conspiracy charge was set up to catch the big fish, the so-called big fish.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can build circumstantial cases based around phone taps and conversations and snitches without actually you touching the drugs. But the conspiracy charge, if you're found to be a high-ranking member of that organization under a conspiracy charge, you will get more time than someone who, say, picked up a package or was found with a kilo in the backseat of his car or whatever.
What was it that you were actually importing?
Ecstasy. They arrested us. It was 7,500 pills, which, as you would know, is not a lot. But I believe that one of the reasons why the feds were so gung-ho and later on the DPP is because they knew that, well, they were expecting a lot more than that.
Yeah.
And actually, in the early stages of the case, there was a lot of reference to, you know, the stash house was never found and so on. But for other circumstances related to another parallel case with my colleagues in FedEx, they had to jump at the time that they jumped, knowing that what they were grabbing was not the mother load, and they actually grabbed the sample. So the 7.5 was a sample. Obviously they were hoping for much more than that. 42, you know, federal police officers investigating for months for $7,500 pills is not a big
waste of time.
Yeah, waste of time.
In the big scheme of things.
Yes.
It actually is. And I mean, you and I both know, and I'm sure others out there that can relate, you know, you've only got to say something that they can utilize and say that it's implicating, you know, a number or an amount or an ongoing supply.
Yeah.
And look, you know, all right, let's not bullshit about it. There's codes and stuff used, people talk in a certain way. But
yes,
a lot of the times there when we were saying or have said something, yeah, you didn't fucking mean exactly what they thought you meant. And
yes,
they try to load you up for it.
You're 100% right. I had several of those in my transcripts. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Let's actually talk about the way that it was done. I mean, you're happy to discuss that now.
Yes, brother. Yes, of course. It's all public knowledge, man.
You've got to give it to you guys. You had a good crack. And yes, the way that you had it, the system that you had in place. Well, I mean, look, we all come undone in the end, but at the time it wasn't too bad a setup, was it?
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, as far as the organization, let's say, one of my co-accused was the customs controller manager at Federal Express. So essentially, the AFP, if they wanted to initiate an investigation into anything that was related with the Federal Express freight company, they had to contact him. My other co-accused was studying to be a customs broker, but already working in the office where all the packages were being cleared and so on. But back to the first guy, the customs controller manager, in the case, they bugged his car. They called him to the AFP building in Goulburn Street. And whilst he's parked downstairs, having the meeting with them upstairs, they're bugging his car in the car park.
Clever.
Yeah, very clever. So that was some of the, I guess, from the abuse of power and responsibility kind of angle, which they like to throw in when it comes time to sentence you and deal with you and all of that. That was a part of it, because obviously it was quite embarrassing to the system and to customs and to the government, let's say.
With that, Rafa, let me ask this.
Yeah.
And we talk about embarrassing a government body.
Yeah.
Because realistically, they like to say that they're so thorough and they're anal about everybody that works. They go through them, but yet he's something that slips through and. Slightly humiliating for them.
Indeed.
Did they really pursue you hard because of that?
Yeah. Particularly my co-accused, because he was the one that abused his position, let's say. I think that term was particularly mentioned at time of sentencing for him, and he did quite a considerable amount of time. Myself, it was more about, you know, being this principal, you know, and you know, one of the reasons why I ended up fighting this thing, even though I was guilty as charged, but not as defined in the roles. That's why I didn't fight it, because at the start, I've got a brief of a statement of facts saying that I'm the contact point. Fast forward a few months leading into trial, and all of a sudden I'm the principal. I'm the head of the syndicate.
Yep.
And that's one of the reasons why I jacked up and said, nah, I'm not copping that shit. You know, why am I going to plead to something that I wasn't? The difference between one and the other is huge. You're talking years and years of difference between one and the other. And that's when I pled guilty and ended up in trial with the infamous Judge Dodd, a.k.a. Judge Nod.
So Judge Nod, Mr. Yeah. Sleepy.
Yeah, sleeping judge.
Hear more about Raphael and the Nodding Judge in Season 3 of The Clink.
For the record, I'm done trying to make y'all comfortable. That's right. For the record, you ain't trying to grow, then it's done for you. That's right. For the record, lab on me going all the way. All the way. For the record, ain't trying to link, no time to waste. Stop calling. For the record, 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 for the record. We'll be right back.